The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
Well, I'm joined once again by travel commentator Conor Faulknan for our regular commuter slot. And this week it's about car renewal insurance costs. Conor, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. Hi.
Now, the whole idea of eliminating what they call dual pricing is that the regular loyal customer of an insurance company was paying, you know, whatever the insurer decided was the appropriate amount year in, year out.
Yeah.
But if you were a newcomer to that insurance company, you might be getting a half price deal.
Yeah, the newcomer always gets the discount, which on the face of it is unfair to the loyal customer. And when you say loyal customer, it's part loyalty, part inertia, because it's a tedious business to change insurance. And, you know, 80% of people don't bother. And that 80% are not getting good value from the insurers, because the insurers are pricing on the basis of who's going to renew. They're trying to maximise their business. So the central bank has been looking at this for a while. They conducted an investigation into it a couple of years ago, published their findings, and said that they were going to come out against this practice of dual pricing or price walking. Now, that regulation actually went live on the 1st of July, so just last week. And it kind of came and went with a whimper. Nobody really spoke about it, despite it being the subject of
debate. No, because I heard on this station a couple of days ago, I heard an ad from an insurance company offering, I think, a 10% discount to new customers. So,
yeah, that sort of incentive is likely to, well, in my view at least, there'll be less of that sort of incentive. Now, Central Bank has been looking at insurers because I think everybody instinctively felt that the consumer is not getting a great deal off insurance companies. That's a sort of a visceral feeling that many of us have, and it's borne out by a lot of the stuff that's been carried out by the central bank and others. And amongst the things that needed to change were the sort of the system of if you like, punishing the loyal customer. So you can't be treated like the mug and just walk your price up year in, year out, just because you stay with the same company. So that's the practice that's being outlawed. But in fairness to the central bank, they themselves have said they'll keep an eye out for unintended consequences, because the corollary is the person who does shop around has been able to get good value. And if that ceases to be true, you know, I'm not convinced that's going to be a good move competitively.
How competitive are the insurers with each other? I mean, if you look at the market, and when you were with the AA, you were a broker, effectively,
right.
Not you personally, but the AA was. And so you were scanning the market.
Yeah.
What kind of diversity in pricing would you have found?
Well, the market goes in cycles. So there are phases when the insurance companies are looking to grow portfolio. They want to bring in new business. Discounts are flying around all over the place, and the consumer sees the premium trend coming down. And then there are the opposite. There's years where they have to catch up. They're behind on you
but
know,
they're not
on
allowed to talk to each other, effectively
no,
be
not.
A cartel. So they have to compete based on their own underwriting and their own reserves that they have to maintain.
Yeah, and there's reasonably good, at the customer interface, there's reasonably good price competition. So historically, you can shop around and get a better deal. There's reasonably good, even in a context where all prices are too high, they're generally competitive with each other. Now, the consumer often doesn't believe that, but there's good evidence to suggest shop around, you'll get good pricing. I think the change that this rule will bring in will benefit a lot of consumers, in fairness, because, you know, the poor sap, if you like, who never looked properly and just let it renew and vaguely thought that the insurance company will be nice to me, that person hasn't been getting good value, and that should improve.
But can you, I mean, when you shop online,
you
could put in theory, a fictitious name, put in your correct age, fictitious name, correct gender, although gender is not allowed to discriminate one
gender,
way or the other.
Yeah.
But whatever, you put it in, and you can find out what the offer is as if you were a new customer. And then you look at your own renewal notice and say, hang on a second, sunshine. Why is, if I bought this online as a new customer, I get this? But that's the kind of the tedium of the whole thing.
And, you know, when you look only at the insurance industry, you think, hey, that's markedly unfair. But there are lots of industries where it's just standard practice and we know it. Consider your broadband or your cell phone or your sports package that you get. In all of those cases, we know that it's really tedious is to change provider, but if you do, chances are you'll get a good deal.
And also, and if you get a price from another provider, you go back to your own provider and say,
on the shins and say,
yeah, and they generally try to price match.
And again, you know, insurers or anybody might have a little discount pool. So if there's a customer who's on the edge, they might lose that customer. That, you know, they can give them a little discount to get them over the line. And most people would accept that that's fairly standard practice. So where do you draw the line? Where does it come to the point where, no, you're not incentivizing new customers, you're abusing existing customers. And there's a, you know, you could have that debate. It's a fine line. But I think the central bank's take on it may downstream have negative consequences if it just means there's less good value available for the ones who do shop around.
It's a very opaque industry.
Part of the problem.
Yeah. Nowadays, if you go to a mortgage broker, for example, to buy a mortgage, to get a mortgage on a house, they do it almost automatically. In fact, a bank will do it online automatically, where you put in your circumstances, your wage, the deposit you've saved, you put in all of these things and it spits out an offer.
The algorithm spits out a number.
Absolutely. So the same thing, by the way, is true of, we often have Dermot Good in here talking about insurance, and Dermot will say, ask them for the corporate plan. They have to give you the lowest plan that's available. So ask them about the corporate plan and
your
they
health,
will give it
your,
to you.
Your health insurance.
And they don't jump up and down about it. They just give it to you. They don't make a song and a dance. In motor insurance, you don't know what things are being taken into account. For example, where you're storing your car. If it's in a, if you've got a lockup, a garage or whatever.
Or what weighting is attached to that.
Exactly. And so why can't we just have the same kind of algorithm that's kind of visible and transparent?
Well, insurers do, but it's a very sophisticated pricing model. It's not, you know, it's not a straightforward one at all. And insurers will be looking at all sorts of things, how to balance their own books in terms of actuarial risk. If they're overexposed in one cohort, they'll morph their pricing to try and balance it out. And they're performing difficult calculations doing that. So you'll find that somebody at the front end, the salesman trying to sell you insurance, they'll be looking at a number on their screen saying, how do we get to 678.31? I don't know. What discounts have I got that I can offer this customer? And you're right, it seems very opaque. Contrast that with the way you buy an airline flight. You know that Ryanair will gouge you if you're going away for an international and you know that you might only pay a tenner if you go another weekend. People don't truly mind because they know there's something Darwinian happening there. In the insurance industry, it all feels murky. And I think the central banks share that feeling. And I think the consumer shares that feeling. And I think this is an attempt to force insurers to be a little bit more transparent. But it's a simplistic approach, I think, to a more complicated issue than that. And it may have negative consequences.
I don't know whether you can answer this question from a listener. My child in their 20s is going to Australia this year. He could be gone for up to 3 years. This year, his insurance is down to around 500, which was brilliant.
Yeah, trending down for most people at the moment.
When he returns, will he be back to where he started, paying thousands for insurance, as he will have to build up to his 5 year plus no claims bonus again?
Yeah, entirely possible. It's it happens to people all the time. People coming back from the States, people coming back from Australia. You essentially don't have a driving record in Ireland. Now, you can get your Australian record or your American record and some insurers, depending on the context, but you're now a non-standard customer. You can't just go onto the internet search engine and get the algorithmic price. And for those customers, often there's poor value out there. And sometimes they do need the help of a broker to get themselves placed. But once they're, you know, back plugged in again, they're fine subsequently. But that is a problem for sure.
Now, this is a very interesting one. I recently got my insurance quote for 462 from my provider. I checked around and got it elsewhere for 360. I agreed to join them, but I hadn't paid any money. My current provider rang me 4 days before renewal and said they'd match the 360 quote. So I got a full €102 off the intended bill.
And you got the virtue of shopping around, even if you didn't change insurance provider. And that's really, really helpful. And that's healthy in the market. Now, you can't blame the insurer. Well, I suppose you could if you want to. But if, you know, if the insurer rings you up and you're on a list of numbers for them to ring to see if they can get the sale, they ring you up and say, why haven't you renewed? Well, I got a better price. Tell you what, I'll match that price. Two things. One, thank you very much. That's £100 off. Two, why didn't you offer me that in the first place if it truly is your best price? And again, you know, are the insurers bad guys? They are running a business and, you know, they're looking across thousands of customers and they're modelling who's likely to renew and who's likely not to. And they're putting all of that into their machine and they're coming up with a sophisticated pricing strategy based on that.
This comment is very interesting and it might be something we would discuss again on the programme. It's the same for car tax. Crazy stuff. A 4 litre car that drives every Sunday for 50 kilometres, the tax per year is 2,400. A 1.6 diesel doing 1,000 kilometres a week, the tax would only be 200 a year. Why is tax on cars not linked to usage? It's such a stupid way of taxing cars.
Yeah, well, that is true. It's a legacy way of taxing cars. And it's been suggested many times that we could move to a usage tax. And with modern technology, it's relatively easy to do that. The other thing is that fuel is a very pure usage tax in its own right. The more diesel you buy, the more tax you pay. Mm. So that, if you like, is a direct mileage-related tax that you do pay. But the point's a fair one. We've a nearly a century-old concept of how you tax motoring, and it could well do with updating.
Yeah. Now, you might do the sums for us before you come in the next time.
The arithmetic,
How much would you have to put on the price of fuel to compensate for moving the road tax off the vehicle and onto the fuel?
Yeah,
because in a high fuel price environment at the moment, it would not be a popular thing to do. Because there's a lot of dodgers out there who don't pay their road tax at all.
Yeah, well, we'll do the arithmetic, but not that much relatively. You pay an awful lot more tax through fuel than you do through your annual road tax. But I don't think that's what you'd do. I don't think you'd put it on fuel. I think we have monitoring devices in cars, things like the London congestion area, or car-free area in the centre of London, and many other cities, the M50 toll bridge, etc. I think it would be a technological solution. So you might be charged a different amount for accessing a town or city during the working day, for example, and you mightn't pay at all if you're accessing at a time that's preferred by the traffic managers. All sorts of sophisticated things that you could do.
Because Big Brother's already watching us.
Well, that's another thing we might do another day, Pat. The amount of information your car is collecting about you and who it's sharing it with. So 21st century problems, and we do still have some 20th century structures in place.
Conor Faulkner, thank you once again for joining us on the programme.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.